And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Monday edition. Joseph Cooper here, along with Bonnie Berman. We had a lot of rain over the weekend, Bonnie.
Yeah, it makes the gardens grow.
So we want to perhaps have you think about gardening or landscaping changes, if you're so inclined. We're joined now by Florida Master Gardener Stan DeFreitas. He's known as Mr. Green Thumb and joins us from Tampa. Hello, Stan.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to be with you. Mm-hmm.
Good to have you. Also joining us is landscaper and master gardener Amanda Thompson. She's the author of, pardon me, Kiss My Aster. That's A-S-T-E-R. It's a graphic guide to creating a fantastic yard totally tailored to you, and she's in Portage, Indiana. Greetings to you, Amanda.
Hi.
Hi. Good to have you.
That must be near Chicago.
Yeah, I had to drive out to my dad's house in Indiana. He's the only person I know with a landline, but I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
Well, your book's a lot of fun, and looks like you had a lot of fun writing it. Why an interactive gardening and landscaping book? Did you hope to attract the younger generation?
Absolutely, and anyone with a short attention span, really.
Right. Well, it does the job. So can our gardening actually be fun?
I think it's a lot of fun, but I had the calling at a young age. My parents made gardening fun for me from the time I was tiny. And hopefully this will help people not just think it's fun, but raise their kids thinking it's fun, too, instead of a chore.
Stan DeFreitas, South Florida has unique gardening needs. Besides planting tomatoes in September, what else is different than up north?
Well, our timing is different. Our seasons are different. Our soils are different. Our pH is different. I mean, up north, everybody talks about acid soils for the most part, and down here, our soils are usually pretty alkaline, so we have to go 180 degrees opposite.
Stan, we have an infestation of the white fly in South Florida. I know of many people who've lost their ficus hedges and trees, just for starters. Are there any remedies to that?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. One would be imidacloprid, which is same material we use for cats and dogs for fleas. It's also available in most of the nurseries.
What's it called?
Seems to help. It's called imidacloprid. Bear Advanced is one of the big local makers. If you go to your Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever, they're going to have a thing called Bear Advanced, and it's got imidacloprid in it. And that material is somewhat systemic, and so it gets pulled up into the trees. It takes a while to work. The other thing I've tried, if you want to try to be organic, you can try some of the neem oil or some of the, even the old-fashioned fly tape, like the yellow sticky tape, and put that in and around the trees. And, of course, they seem to go to the color and then get stuck to the either the fly tape you buy, or you can actually get some, you know, cardboard or something and paint it with some oil or glue, and they'll get stuck to the board. That's kind of a mechanical trap.
Hmm. What about the safer soap? Is that effective?
That you can try that too. That sometimes works. I sometimes joke that you get nice clean bugs, but you know, it helps to a point. The problem with white flies is they can come on by the thousands and literally by the millions, and then sometimes you can just get run over by a pest if there isn't a natural control.
They really go to work on tomato plants too.
They really do. I've had some problems here. I've been using some of the sticky fly tape, and it seems like it's helping me, but I don't know if I'm having the same infestation that you're having further south in Florida than I'm having. But if I had a big hedge, I'd be getting some of the Bear Advance, not to give them a free plug, but it's available, and it seems to work pretty well.
Do you have problems with your gardens or your landscapes, or do you want to brag a little, or you don't know where to begin? You can call us, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. We're at your service today. You can email radio@wlrn.org, or you can tweet us at Topical Currents.
Tell me, Amanda Thompson, you say it's a good idea to drive around the high-income areas of a community to get the best landscape plans.
Yeah, you know, and not always just high-income, but maybe an artsier part of town. Drive around and snap pictures, or just mentally picture in your head what works for them, what look you like, what look would work for you. And you can make a little file of those photos and either work on the internet to identify what they are or just take them into a garden center, because I'm a huge fan of people who work in garden centers as a great resource. They know exactly what's going to work for you because they're growing it all in their yards because they're total plantaholics and they're working there for the discount. So you can bring in those photos and they'll tell you what they are and tell you if you should do it or not do it, or you know how to do it specifically for your area. It's just perfect and cheap.
What's the most common mistake that people make in landscaping? Too many varieties of plants, perhaps?
I think that's definitely a mistake that people make, but it's not the most common. I think the most common mistake is not doing anything or being afraid to do anything, or having, especially like in a new community when everyone's yard kind of looks the same, that's the biggest mistake. If you aren't putting your stamp on it and you're too afraid to get out there and do it, that's just horrible. I want people to feel as at ease in the outdoors decorating as they are in the indoors.
I thought you'd say the most common mistakes are dyed red mulch, fake deer, and too many topiaries.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of into that, too. But, dyed red mulch drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. I like my dye where I can see it, and that's on the top of my head.
Well, that sounds good.
Stan DeFritis, you mentioned the difference in soil pH here in Florida. Should people have their soil checked?
They should. Most extension services and most nurseries, as Amanda was saying, are great resources, and most of them will do a pH check either for free or they'll do it at a nominal fee. And I can tell you most of South Florida is going to have a pH of around 8, which is very alkaline, and it's one of the problems that we have when people try to grow, you know, azaleas and camellias and gardenias. You know, you'll notice when it comes from the nursery, they're all growing in pure peat, and, you know, that typically, you're going to have to amend the soil if you're going to try to grow acid-loving plants in South Florida.
How about asters?
You can grow them here at the right time, but some things we grow better here than others. I mean, you know, we grow great palm trees and philodendrons. We don't do so well with tulips and daffodils and things of that nature.
Stan, somebody, Kristen writes that imidacloprid,
mm-hmm,
is evil. It contributes, to honeybee die-off. She says she uses regular dish soap and water to treat her white fly on gumbo limbo.
Well, she can try that, and I say she may get real clean bugs. Well, I'm not against organic. I would try the organic approach first and see if that works, and if it does, more power to you. If it doesn't, then I am not afraid to break out some of the chemicals. I've been using imidacloprid, and I've got honeybees all over the area, and I haven't seen any mass dropping of them by using the imidacloprid, but there are a lot of folks out there. If you don't want to use chemicals, don't.
Okay, we have a couple of calls. This is Enrique in Miami. Hi there.
Yes, my question is the following. I just planted a native hedge. It's Simpson Stoppers, amerciensis, and I wanted to know if I can just, you know, like control my garden with like ladybugs, and therefore I would not spray with anything else because I know that would, you know, it would cause any damage to them. So that's my question.
Okay, my answer. I like the idea, and I've got a big bunch of ladybugs last year and put them on my gardenia, and they seem to help quite a bit. Unfortunately, the ladybugs don't always seem to know to stay at their home. I mean, after a while, they tend to go off to the neighbors and down the road. But if there's a balance in population to where you see the good guys like lady beetles eating the bad guys, then I'm all for that. I mean, we're never going to be a point where we're totally getting rid of the bad guys by spraying. And more we are going toward organic chemicals and natural controls. And even though I mentioned chemicals, as I said earlier, I would go with, if you can get it under balance and you've got it organically working, stay with it.
Okay, Enrique, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, Evan has an agave that grew a stalk this year starting at Christmas, about 7 feet tall, diameter less than a soft drink can. He'd like to cultivate the pups, 15 clusters with many small buds on each that are still attached to the stalk. Please advise the best practice to encourage the buds.
They should all root easily. If you want to increase your rooting odds, get some rooting hormone, endobutric acid, which you should be able to get at almost any nursery or garden supply store. But I think he would have success. Just he can break off pieces, put him into a good potting soil that he can get at the local nursery, and I think he'll be Johnny Appleseed. He'll have more, you know, he'll be the agave king.
Okay.
Amanda Thompson, tell us about your garden.
We just moved into a 1956 mid-century modern ranch that's very Jetsons. So it's got a very overgrown 50s landscape that I'm trying to knock back into shape. Lots of pruning, putting in some new gardens, and I'm working on putting in a 120-foot long, almost 30-foot wide border garden in graduated color from white to purple. So it's going to be a lot of work.
I read that you planted an invasive to manage your erosion in your new garden. How did that work out?
Invasive is a tricky word for a lot of people. I'm using things that are rampant. They're not on the invasive species list.
I see.
They're not things that I would recommend people who weren't total Jedi-level gardeners to grow. I know how to manage this stuff because this is what I do for a living. It's working really well. We have a tiny little stream that runs through the back of my yard. It runs like it's like a garden, like a left-on garden hose. It's a tiny little stream. But when we get these huge rains that we've been getting, it gets to be a big deal. So the things that I've planted have really helped to stave this little tiny stream from eating up my whole backyard.
Stan, I'm wondering, a lot of us live on the coast and have the constant challenges of salt and wind. Is there anything that grows out there?
Oh, sure. There's a whole list of plants. In fact, I have a book called Stan DeFritis' Complete Guide to Florida Gardening, and we kind of list many of the plants that that take tougher conditions. I mean, sea grapes will grow right down where they're getting salt spray.
Right, other than the sea grapes, though.
Oh, I have planted hibiscus on sea plantings. I have planted even viburnums, some of the dwarf viburnums, chefleras, bamboo. There's a lot of plants. If they have a tough, leathery leaf, they usually will take the salt better than, you know, there's some delicate plants. I normally don't recommend azaleas out on the beaches because it's just too alkaline and they don't like the salt.
And the wind? I mean, you often get wind.
We do. We have tough conditions in Florida. In fact, you know, people up north talk about overwintering, and we have to talk about oversummering. So, you know, it just gets so hot. I mean, even today I was outside going, gosh, I'm praying for cool weather. You know, where people up north are praying for the heat.
Right.
Amanda, tell me about landscape lighting. It was interesting in your book, you say, be sure you don't duplicate your neighbor's lighting.
Yeah, it can look a little cookie cutter if everyone has the same lights. And for a long time, there weren't a lot of options in lights. And that's a good sign that maybe it's time to update. Landscape lighting is one of my favorite things to really change things up, and especially if you have some parts of your garden that you love, shining a light on it at night it just adds another dimension. It's one of those things that you're like, why didn't I do this a long time ago? It's way cooler than you'd ever think that just a silly little light could do.
Should you go to the expense of putting in actual AC lines and conduit, or should you,
use the Malibu stuff
and then also the solar?
Yeah, the solar lights are great, and they're fun. They don't really deliver a ton of power, but they sure are affordable, and you can light up things like, you can buy those little tiny $1.50 lights at Target and shove them in a pot, and it just looks spectacular for a tiny little accent. The bigger lights and uplighting trees is the big bones, but it's really worth it. It looks really great.
You know, Amanda, many of us in South Florida live in mega-story condos. Any suggestions for if we're lucky enough to have balconies?
Oh, you're so lucky out there that you can just fill a patio with bromeliads and just leave it, and that's it for months and months and months. That's something that I can't do. I can for a few months, but there's so many things that you can just have a little bit of low-care color, succulents, things like that. Look on the bright side. It's something that you can do that not everyone can.
Oh, okay.
And another call. This is Michael in North Miami Beach. Hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My question is this. I have a fruit tree. I'm in Miami, Florida, and I have a sweet sap tree. It is from what I hear, it's not native to Florida. It was a Jamaican tree, and it's only about a foot tall, and what I'm having is I find that it finally came back to life, and then I look at it, and it's beautiful. And then the next day, there's leaves that are, like, half cut, you know, like from, like, cookie cutters are, like, coming and you know, cutting my leaves and eating them, and the tree is getting eaten alive before it even gets a chance to grow. Do you have any suggestions of what I can put on there and what that
you
might be?
It's like a, like somebody's taken scissors and made a perfect cut?
Exactly.
Okay, that's a leaf cutter bee, and I wouldn't get too worried about it. If they get real rambunctious, you might, oh, they're one of the soap products, one of the neem oil products probably would slow them down. They just like to, they make a hole that same perfect size, and that's the reason they always make the same cookie cutter indentation on your leaf. It always looks the same because they pack their little area with it for, I guess, for food and for shelter.
So then it's a bee. It's not a beetle?
It's a bee. No.
It's a bee. Okay.
It's not a bee. I know you're thinking of John Paul Ringo and the boys without a bee. We can't do rock and roll like we used to, but not those Beatles. We're talking about a bee.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right, have a great day.
Corinne has been planting impatiens every year, and they've always bloomed beautifully the past 2 years, though they didn't do well. They barely bloomed and didn't spread. She watered and fertilized regularly to no avail. Any advice for next winter? Because she loves her impatiens.
I've got this.
Okay, go ahead.
Downy mildew is going around in impatiens like crazy. We've even got it up here. It's a fungus. You can't get rid of it other than if you're growing them in containers. You can sanitize your container, use all new soil, and do impatiens in your containers. But in beds, it's in your soil, and it will always be in your soil, at least for the foreseeable future. So impatiens are pretty much out for a lot of people for a really long time.
And what is it called? What did they call it?
Downy mildew. It's a downy mildew.
Oh.
You mean downy like the fabric softener.
Yes, but it does not smell as good.
So she can't do anything? She has to...
You can do a lot of things. You just can't do impatiens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you might try something like diethanum 45, which is a fungicide. It's a zinc manganese-based fungicide, and it might give you some control.
Okay.
Tell me, Stan DeFreitas, how about giving some contact information for your website where people can get a hold of you, and also we'll have Amanda do the same.
Okay, I've got a website called AskMrGreenThumb.com, and you know, it's a site where you can see some of my, I did some TV shows for CBS. I also did 12 years on PBS. We had a show, Mr. Green Thumb Show, where you can look at some of our past TV shows. We actually have, I think, four of them up right now that we did for CBS, and I say I did 12 years for PBS as well. We used to do 52 shows a year in the old days on television, which was kind of unusual.
And Amanda, you have a blog?
I do. It's at kissmyaster.co. We've got a little party on Facebook all the time. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Tumblr. I'm on Vine. You name it, I'm on it.
All right. Sounds like fun.
Stan, I've got an emailer here who wants to know how we can get rid of dollar weeds.
God, that's a toughie.
They're very prolific in shady areas, right?
It is, and it's usually a water weed. Of course, we either have feast or famine in Florida where we don't have too much water for a while, and then we get hit with 5 or 6 inches in one day. Dollar weed in St. Augustine, you can use a material called atrazine, A-T-R-A-Z-I-N-E, atrazine, for St. Augustine, which is our primary grass in South Florida. You know, of course, the people, like where Amanda is, they would say, we used to pull that out as crabgrass up there because it looks like it. It's a wide-bladed grass. But in Florida, it's one of our primary grasses because it will take the heat and conditions pretty well.
How about fertilizers such as the Surf stuff that has the weed and fertilizer?
You could use a weed and feed.
Weed and
of course,
feed,
right now there's some restrictions on what you can use and when, so check with your local nursery. But atrazine is in some of the weed and feeds for St. Augustine, and does a pretty good job for lowering, and also if you can cut back on the water some when you are watering. I mean, we see some people with their systems, you know, going shooting water out all over during the middle of the rainy season, which means you need to curtail that system.
Stan, when I mentioned to friends you'd be on the program, the overriding question was, can I grow or how can I grow roses successfully in South Florida? Is it possible?
It is possible. We grow roses. I'd get tough varieties. I had a Don Juan rose that I grew for like 25 years, and I loved it. It was very trouble-free. You know, it didn't get, you know, like Amanda was talking about the mildew. A lot of roses do get powdery mildew and downy mildew and rust mites and aphids. and scales, and other than that, they're trouble-free.
Okay.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Well, it is some work to it, but it's not impossible to grow them here. I mean, just getting good varieties and building the soil. I mean, you got to make a $10 hole for your $10 rose.
What about introducing certain insects to repel others? Is that advisable, or do you just get more problems?
No, I like the idea. I say I tried the lady beetles last year, and I said they just didn't stay at home. But they were happy eating aphids and things. And again, I'm all for the organic as much as you can. If it doesn't work, then I'll go to my next level of pesticide that maybe isn't as organic. But you know, some people are only organic, some people are only chemical. I think there's more of a mix that you can go with.
Of course, it's early June, so we are in hurricane season. Amanda, you have a lot of tips on how to properly prune. Give us a highlight of those.
Oh, I'm pretty into pruning, and if it was up to me, I would clear my calendar and just go door-to-door and prune everyone's everything.
Well, come on down.
Come on down. I think, especially for people who have winters, even when you don't, I imagine, you want to start by taking out whatever's dead, and then you want to look inside and take out anything that's crossing, so things that when the wind blows, they rub together, because you're kind of opening it up for all kinds of nasties when you have things that are open. And so you want to remove anything that's crossing, and then you want to stand back and make it shaped in a way that's pleasing to you, but not too crazy.
Should we always do it ourselves? I mean,
hire someone, for God's sake, of course. If you're out of your comfort zone, hire someone, and just make sure that you like that person and you trust that person. And it should be like having someone come in and clean your house, someone that is in your space. You want to know them and believe in them. Just think that there's a lot of people who are, you know, a guy with a pickup truck and a mower does not a landscaper make.
Right. But you have a great description of the landscape architect.
Yeah.
In your book.
I may have known a landscape architect or two in my time.
That's what it looked like. It's a lot of fun.
And let's go back to our callers. This is George. He's in Miami. Hello, George.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm really enjoying this, and I am not a outdoorsy farmer type, but I did purchase 2 years ago a half-century ranch home with about 15,000 square feet of property in South Miami, and I didn't know what I was getting myself into. So I've got two issues there. One of them is there's these vines growing along the entire fence throughout the whole property, and they're pretty thorny, and they look a little bit like kind of fern-like. I'm not sure what they are, but if you try to pull them out, even with gloves, they stick you. And so I'm wondering if you know of a fix for that, or if I have to just kind of tear everything out. And then second, I have a big nuisance tree that is just full of this black soot, and it's right next to a very beautiful avocado tree. But this nuisance tree is probably like 30, 40 feet tall, and I'm not sure if I should cut it down or if I should treat it. So just trying to get some ideas there.
Sometimes you have to have permits before you can cut trees down.
True. The black sooty mold tells me you've got insects, of course. Wherever you've got black sooty mold, they're as quickly as aphids and scales eat, they secrete a honeydew secretion, which we call it, and on that the black sooty mold grows. So it's a cause and effect. If you've got insects that are eating and defecating on the leaf, if you will, it's the reason you've got the black soot. So I would try to find that, you know, cure that if I can by either spraying, and you can try with the neem oil or safer soaps, or you can go with pesticides or the imidacloprid we talked about earlier. You definitely have some pest going on. And thorny things, well, get Amanda, like get those shears out that she was talking about, and either cut stuff out or put some gloves on and rip them out, or then maybe if not, you can use something like Roundup, which is the glyphosate tends to be an equal opportunity killer, and it often works on noxious weeds.
Venora loves getting her hands dirty and working out in the garden. She said, adding to Amanda's suggestion for gardening ideas, the Miami-Dade Public Library offers thousands of books, also databases on gardening and landscaping. So thanks, Venora.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's take a short break on our program. We'll be back with more.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents,
were
Monday edition.
Were you a soccer player, Bonnie?
No. Nor was I a gardener. We're at your service today. It's a gardening show. We're speaking with Amanda Thompson. She's a landscape designer, master gardener, and author. Kiss My Aster is the name of her book.
What did you say?
You heard me. And Stan DeFritis, Mr. Green Thumb, an author.
Stan the man.
And a gardening advisor in the state of Florida. The Complete Guide to Florida Gardening is the name of his book.
Stan, how about chinch bugs?
Well, they're the bane of St. Augustine. And if you've got St. Augustine, you'll probably see chinch bugs show up. They're about 1/5 of an inch in size, kind of a black and white in color, or red and white in color when they come out in their nymphal stage. But they can be controlled by a number of different over-the-counter pesticides.
I'm wondering if either of you know about plants that are poisonous to pets.
The ASPCA has a really great list on its website. More plants than you would possibly imagine are on that list.
Uh-huh.
And the deal is a lot of plants are poisonous in great amounts. When it comes especially to dogs, either you know if your dog is getting the kind of dog that gets into stuff or the kind of dog that isn't. My dog could care less about my garden, so I don't really worry too much about it. If you have a dog that does get into everything and eats everything, pay good attention to the list.
Okay, and that's at the ASPCA website.
Yeah, it's a huge list. I mean, more than you could imagine.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's
pretty
quite extensive.
It's like everything. It's
how
like
about, thanks. Stan, how about those kind of pests that are or poisonous plants in South Florida that a lot of people have?
Well, there's a lot of them out there, as Amanda mentioned. I mean, rosary pea, I think of as one that people, you know, used to make rosaries out of. And I was always worried about little children, you know, sticking that in their mouth. Oleanders are poisonous if they're burned. If they're burned, or if you start, you know, people used to cut them and cook hot dogs on them, and that was a big problem. Or during the winter here, when we had big cold snaps, people would sometimes gather them and then burn them, and that gave off kind of a poisonous gas. For the most part, though, I mean, oleanders are still, you know, unless you you know, abuse them, as Amanda was saying, you know, dose makes the poison, just like with pesticides. One leaf isn't going to bother you, but if you're, you know, if you're eating great quantities of potentially poisonous plants, you can have problems.
Mary wants to know if there are any hostas that'll grow in Miami summer shade and that will survive many years without the cold weather die back they get up north.
North, and there are. And there's some new hostas out that for years that we always associated hostas with more of the north and let's say in Amanda's area, but here the hybridizers have been working, and there you can find some of them in your local nursery that will be adaptable to Florida.
Amanda, in the long run, does it make sense to hire a professional landscaper?
It depends. You know, you really have to maybe get in a garden center and judge your feelings. Like, is this something that excites you, or is this something that just scares the crap out of you? If it scares you, why get involved? I still encourage you to put your personal stamp on it, but through someone that you hire.
I suppose it certainly helps with your property value.
Yeah, well, I mean, it helps with your property value, but it helps. You're the one who comes home to it every day. If you're
exactly.
coming home with something cookie cutter, just because you're afraid to get your hands dirty or you are afraid, you think you're a black thumb, that doesn't mean that it shouldn't still have your personal stamp on it. You can still get things you like by hiring someone that you like and that someone you enjoy working with.
It's Topical Currents at your service. Our telephone number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email, that's radio@WLRN.org. And if you'd like to tweet, that's @TopicalCurrents. Next caller, Kristen Plantation. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I love growing edibles. I have, like, mulberries, black raspberries, blackberries, peppers, like, Everglades tomatoes growing right now really well. And I have a dragon fruit growing in my gumbo limbo. And I was wondering, like, last year it flowered for the first time, but it didn't set fruit. And I've, like, hand-pollinated some eggplant that I have. Should I do the same thing for that? Because I know the flower is, like, really big.
You can. You can take, like, big, long wings and put them on. And no, just get a little paint-by-numbers brush, and you can do the same thing that you've done for your...
Okay. And I have a key lime that it's, like, 7 or 8 years old. My mom doesn't know if she bought it, if it was from seed or if it was grafted, but it's never flowered. And I don't know if it has a virus or something that's inhibiting it from flowering, but I was it's like as tall as I am, and I would love for it to flower and do something other than get eaten by citrus leaf miners.
Is it going straight up toward heaven?
It's going kind of straight up, and it's starting to puff out a little bit, but it's kind of going straight.
Does it have real large thorns?
The thorns are getting bigger.
Bigger, okay. It's probably was a seedling, because normally grafted trees will produce in about 2 to 3 years, because what you're doing is taking mature wood, which is your scion, and you're putting it onto immature wood, your rootstock, and that by putting mature wood on, it's ready to do its thing early. But when we grow things from seed, it normally takes anywhere from 7 to maybe as long as 12 years for a seedling to start to produce. Now, if you do go by the library, or better yet, buy one of my books, I have a demonstration in there, a little drawing on how to do some grafting, both the cleft graft and the budding. And since you're into it, I would try it. I mean, I used to teach horticulture, and I used to have students where I would teach them how to do grafting and budding. And it's a fun process. I mean, at one point I had a tomato growing out of a potato. And one of my radio buddies said, "Wowie zowie, Green Thumb's trying to grow some ketchup for his French fries." I had 5 different citrus on one tree.
I have something like that now. And if I can make a suggestion, I'm growing Everglades tomatoes. They're like the size of my thumbnail. And the plants are prolific. They're bigger. Like they're like 6 feet tall. And it's awesome. My coworkers love them.
And where did you get them? Would you get those
David McLean. I bought them from David McLean at Trinity Churchside Garden in Fort Lauderdale. And I'd never seen them before. And the plant is immense. And I've had to brace it with TPs and, like, it's rigged up. But it's awesome.
How do the tomatoes taste?
Oh, they're like beefsteak tomatoes in peewee form. They're terrific. They're not as like sugary as a grape tomato or a cherry tomato. I love them.
Oh, they sound great.
Oh, they're like in salads. They're really good. We have them like every night, and they're always more on the plants now. I use diatomaceous earth to keep my the tomato hornworms off, and it's done really well.
Oh.
And the beauty, too, the small tomatoes will grow all through our summer heat, whereas the bigger fruited tomatoes stop when it starts getting... really
I'm excited to see like how big I can get the plant.
You know,
thank
and
you very much.
The joy up in gardening, which is fun too. I mean, everybody should try gardening, even if you've not always had success. You will, you know, it's a process. The first time you bake a cake, you may not be successful, but if you keep doing it, you will have more success.
Maybe you should Maybe you should come by the station, Kristen, on Thursday when Linda Gastenheimer is here, and we'll say
yes. I will bring you some Everglades tomatoes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Call Bonnie and she'll make arrangements.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Bye. Well, I got a strange email by coincidence this morning, and maybe you can comment on this, Amanda. Protect your garden from rabbits. Deter them humanely by soaking cotton balls in distilled white vinegar. Place them in a plastic film container with 2 holes poked in the top. Do you know anything about that, and does that work for any other critters?
Oh, firstly, who has a film canister laying around in 2013?
I don't know.
Things like that do work, and I love to use just chili powder. I just go to the Mexican grocery store at the corner and buy bags of it and shake it around, and that really works pretty well.
Oh, okay.
I live on the edge of a forest preserve, and I have deer in my yard occasionally, and they leave my hosta salad bar alone. There are things that are, so easy and so chemical-free and so cheap.
Do you hear those deer sneezing any?
Yeah, maybe. My dog does. But it keeps him out of the garden, too. Not that he's ever really that interested, but animals are so much more sensitive to smell than we are. They know when to stay away. The only thing I would worry about is what they're making a little salad dressing with that vinegar.
Yes. Well, they could.
Film canisters, gosh.
I know. I don't know when this was written. I mean, I got it today.
My 2-year-old will never see a film canister in her life.
Maybe she has an 8-track tape player, too.
Right.
She has a typewriter.
A reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
And we move along to John. He's in the Keys. Thanks for your patience, John. Hi.
Good afternoon. I've got a question for Stan. I'm thinking about putting a hedgerow in or a privacy fence or a living fence, and I'm considering bamboo. And I've looked at, I guess, a clumper or running-type bamboo, maybe putting some sort of barrier in so it doesn't, you know, go on to my neighbor. But I was wanting to find out, I looked online to see how many different, you know, types there are, and there's, you know, lots of them.
There's hundreds of different varieties. I'd go with a clumper. If you go with a running type, it'll, you know, it may start in your place and then wind up finishing up in Fort Lauderdale. So, yeah, the clumpers are better. The runners I wouldn't probably plant, and there's a bunch of different clumpers, and some of them that are uniquely, some like black bamboo, and there's Buddha bamboo. There's all kinds of bamboo. I've never been a real big fan of it, but I do think it has a place. My neighbor planted some just so I won't see all the black mold on their house. And,
that was considerate.
That was nice.
How close would you, plant the groups of clumpers if you had to go, you know, say, you know, 75 feet?
I'd probably plant maybe 5 or 6 feet apart if you want something that's fairly close, fairly quickly. I mean, they're quick growers. They are probably the fastest growers.
Okay. And I saw when I was looking at these different, some of them grow to 25 feet and some grow to 50. I mean, can those be trimmed back?
They can be and probably will have to be from time to time. And, you know, the nice thing is it's not too hard. With a saw, you can, you know, go into the, pole fishing business.
Okay. All righty. Thank you much for your time today.
We're at your service. It's our gardening show, and we have lots of calls. We're going to come back and take them after the short break.
You can find Topical Currents on Facebook, a dedicated page with daily program descriptions, links to our guests, authors, and books. Facebook.com/Topical Currents.
And we return, Topical Currents, at your service, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Master Gardener Stan DeFritis, and also landscaper and master gardener Amanda Thompson. Before we run out of time, the two of you, once again, give a contact info. We'll also have links on our Topical Currents Facebook page.
And also on the WLRN page.
Thanks.
And you just go to Topical Currents. Amanda, again?
I have a website/blog at kissmyaster.co. There's a Kiss My Aster page on Facebook, which is kind of funny. It's amusing to even me. And I write for Fine Gardening. I'm on their blog, and for Proven Winners on their blog. And I have a book called Kiss My Aster that's funny and funky.
Who came up with that title?
I did.
I'd expect nothing less.
I've had a blog called Kiss My Aster for about 9 years, so they just decided to go with it. After making me come up with 30 other titles first, let me tell you.
Stan, and again, your website?
Is Ask Mr. Green Thumb, askmrgreenthumb.com.
How did you gain that distinction of becoming Mr. Green Thumb?
Well, I was doing radio. Actually, about 40 years ago, I started in radio as a youngster.
I can kind of hear that radio going on there.
I can do the news radio, 970. You know, I mean, I've done radio. I was on 100 stations at one point around the country.
Oh.
And I did a show on PBS. But I found sometimes DeFritis is not as easy as Jones or Smith. And so when people would, the radio guy that I was working with said, we're going to call you Mr. Green Thumb. And people seemed to gravitate toward that. And I thought, you know, that's an easy handle for people to go toward. And I kind of like the title of her Kiss My Aster's book. That's an interesting title as well. But we've sold 300,000 gardening books in Florida, partly because everybody is from somewhere else.
That's true.
Okay, let's go back to calls. We've got Miriam. Oops, I got to turn. There I go. Miriam, Miami Shores. Hi.
Hi. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
I was just calling because I wanted to offer a suggestion, but also wanted to know if our experts have heard of it as a crabgrass killer, natural. It's from Weasel AG, and literally this is, the active ingredient is cinnamon, and it says it has inert properties that are, include corn flour, wheat flour, cumin, and sodium bicarbonate. I have used it, and it is miraculous. It literally, I have St. Augustine, and it leaves the St. Augustine and just kills around it. And as you dust it on, it just, you just smell cinnamon and cumin, and it seems like it, I know it works, but it seems like it's really harmless. I didn't know if anyone had experience with it.
How much do you say in a square yard?
Well, that's the thing. It's not cheap. These come in.
Do you put it into a spreader?
No, it comes in its own container that has little holes. Like, it's like a ginormous spice container.
Ginormous. That's a new word.
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's 2 pounds of basically would be like a condiment. And you just sprinkle it on. You have to wet the grass completely, soak it, and then put it on. And the white powder turns to yellow when it's active.
I think it's a great idea. And I've known folks have used it. My problem is I don't know if it's going to last. I think you're going to find the crabgrass is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be a once and done forever. But
mm-hmm.
You know, if at worst it knocks it back, and your yard smells like cinnamon, so that's not a bad thing.
I was trying to find an alternative because I didn't want to use what's it called, the weed and feed that everybody uses,
mm-hmm.
because they say it's a damage to the aquifer and the leaching of everything. And so I researched and I found this, and it has seemed to work, and I wonder if am I doing good.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, it won't hurt anything, and I think it'll help. I do think you'll be using it again, but even if you're using the weed and feeds and other stuff, you're going to be doing it again, too. So there is, you know, gardening to me is a continual life process. It's not going to be, there's never a once and done.
Okay, because I had just heard weed and feed was so harmful.
Well, maybe it is to a point. I mean, some people will say it. I'm not necessarily a big, I worked as an extension horticulturist for 7 years through IFAS, the University of Florida. And so we were kind of trained toward recommending chemicals first, quite honestly. But even that has changed over the years. And a lot of times today our first response would be, and not that I'm with the university system anymore, but would be to go with organic type-based chemicals first and then go to other things if that doesn't work. And the problem I heard with the cinnamon stuff, and I've had many people call me over the years that it works, but, you know, after a month or two, the crabgrass tends to start coming back.
Hmm. Okay, I'll keep
it'll
my
knock
eye
it back for a while, and it knocks it back pretty quickly. So, and if it works, I say it smells like cinnamon, so that's not a bad thing. Plus, recent research is talking about cinnamon helping with Alzheimer's and stuff too. So,
also heart,
you know,
right?
Yeah, also with your heart and other stuff. So, you know, if it works, it's probably something we could sprinkle on a lot of things, and we'd probably be good.
Okay, we have to run, Miriam.
Thank you.
And Tracy wants to know if Preen works in Florida. Preen? Yeah.
Preen is a pre-emergent herbicide, and it does work, and it helps. It's kind of like birth control for weeds.
Oh.
And it tends to, especially, you know, if you're like I am, one of the things I hate to do is do a lot of weeding. So if you use the Preen in your beds, it will cut down your weeds somewhat.
Tom writes that he uses, I can't pronounce it right, imidacloprid. Mm-hmm. And he says it doesn't work well for him. It apparently degrades fast in alkaline soils. He said he has better results using green light tree and shrub insect control with Safari that uses a different active ingredient.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. I mean, everybody has different things that work well, and I'm always listening for new products. And if something works, people hopefully will go to our website and let us know about whatever's working well for them, too.
Amanda, I imagine in your area you'd have to be battling these bugs like we do.
Yeah, I mean, different problems, but yes, absolutely.
And we'll go along to Frank. Hey, Frank.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? A question about some palm trees. I have a relatively small lot. I have a coconut palm in one corner. And then 10 feet away from that, I have a queen palm. And then next to that queen palm, I have another queen palm. Queen palms are relatively dirty. I was wondering how close are those trees, too close, and should I cut the middle one down?
You can plant them pretty close. I mean, often some of the growers will actually put the plants together where they'll have a multi-trunk. You know, it's usually not a something that happens in nature, but it often is forced upon palms to grow them right next to each other.
Right.
You know, it's up to you. It's not necessarily a problem. Ericostrum, it used to be called Ericostrum romansoffianum was the Latin name for queen palms, and mm-hmm. The old name. They gave it a Russian czar's name for a Brazilian palm.
The problem I'm having is the middle one, it seems like the two outer palm trees, their fronds are growing right into the middle of each other, you know what I mean? And sometimes I have to get up there and cut the dead palm fronds down. I was wondering if they were indeed too close, but what you're saying is it shouldn't be a problem.
Shouldn't be a problem other than maybe maintenance. If you don't like doing it, then obviously you're in control, you know, as Amanda was talking, getting your pruning shears out. If you don't like something, make it easier on yourself so you will enjoy gardening more.
Yeah, and the other problem I'm having is it's very close to our pool. They're only about 10 feet away from the pool, so the pool tends to get really dirty sometimes.
Yep, they can be messy. I mean, I like palms. I think they're beautiful, and they're part of, you know, something we grow in Florida that you can't grow in so much of the rest of the country. But they do have seeds, and they have, you know, everything has a problem.
Right.
But they're beautiful, so I'd still grow with them.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Stan, we're getting near the end of the show, and Amanda, but I saw that you started the first community garden in the state. How does one go about starting a community garden?
I was down in Pinellas. I worked as an extension horticulturist back then, and they had the city of St. Pete wanted to have a community garden, and I went down and I kind of gave, talked about tomatoes and peppers and plants, and every week I would go down and try to help some
right.
of the folks. Because it's, you know, they're everything you grow, there's always a problem. But
right.
if you look at the fun part of it, when you go out and harvest your own tomatoes, your own peppers, your own whatever, it's fun. And, of course, a lot of folks go to the community gardens. Maybe they live in condos and stuff to where they don't really have
exactly.
the room to do it.
Yeah, we always have news about that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Stan DeFritis, Mr. Green Thumb, the author of The Complete Guide to Florida Gardening, and Amanda Thompson, the author of Landscape Designer KissMyAster.co. And thanks so much for joining us today, both of you.
Thanks for having us.
And that wraps up today's edition. Apologies to those we couldn't get to, Carlos and Dave and Ben. Our producer is Richard Ives, technical direction by Caroline Brader-Watts. Paul Leary is our online producer. Find free audio archives and downloads of past programs and this program at our website. That's WLRN.org. Additional links, discussion, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow's program is with University of Texas Professor Thomas McGarrity about his book, Freedom to Harm, The Lasting Legacy of the Laissez-Faire Revival. Calendar time. On this day, 1925, 88 years ago, the birth of columnist and novelist Nat Hentoff in Boston. A Fulbright scholar at the Sorbonne, he's been a leading jazz critic for decades, especially in The Village Voice. And on this day, 1964, 49 years ago, Capitol Records releases the single and album A Hard Day's Night, the score for the movie of the same name. It supplanted Louis Armstrong's Hello, Dolly as the number one tune. The Hard Day's Night movie was the inspiration for the Monkees TV series. One more before we hit the road, Jack. On this day in 2004, 9 years ago, the death of composer and singer Ray Charles in Beverly Hills, age 73. What I Say, I Can't Stop Loving You, and Hoagy Carmichael's classic Georgia on My Mind. We leave with a thought from Ray Charles, who had a 20-year heroin addiction. Quote, I did it myself. It wasn't society. It wasn't a pusher, It wasn't being blind or being black or being poor. It was all my doing. Joseph Cooper here for Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.